The MarTech Podcast is a proud member of the I Hear Everything Podcast Network. Looking to launch or scale your podcast? I Hear Everything delivers podcast production, growth, and monetization solutions that transform your words into profit. Ready to give your brand a voice? Then visit IHearEverything.com.
From advertising to software as a service to data.
Across all of our programs and clients, we've seen a 55 to 65% open rate.
Getting brands authentically integrated into content performs better than TV advertising.
Typical lifespan of an article is about 24 to 36 hours.
If we're reaching out to the right person with the right message and a clear call to action, then it's just a matter of timing.
Welcome to the MarTech Podcast, a member of the I Hear Everything Podcast Network. In this podcast, you'll hear the stories of world-class marketers that use technology to drive business results and achieve career success. Here's the host of the MarTech Podcast, Benjamin Shapiro.
Welcome to the MarTech Podcast. I'm Benjamin Shapiro, the executive producer of the MarTech Podcast, and today we've got a special episode for you, which is going to be guest hosted by Doug Bell, who's the CMO of Chief Outsiders. Doug is a veteran CMO with a background in helping growth stage B2B SaaS companies reach their true potential, and I'm thrilled to invite him and some of his friends to take the microphone and share their knowledge with you, our loyal MarTech Podcast listeners. Okay, here's a special episode of the MarTech Podcast, guest hosted by Doug Bell, the CMO of Chief Outsiders.
Hello, marketers. My name is Doug Bell from Chief Outsiders, and today we're going to be talking about navigating the evolving data landscape. Joining me today is Alex Terrio, who is the Chief Growth Officer at Lotemy, which is a technology company that makes customer data smarter, faster, and easier to use for digital marketers. Lotemy's end-to-end data collaboration platform empowers marketers, agencies, and media owners to access, analyze, and activate the data they need to understand and engage consumers. And today, Alex and I are going to be talking about the rise of data collaboration. Okay, here's my conversation with Alex Terrio, the Chief Growth Officer at Lotemy. Alex, welcome to the podcast.
Doug, thank you for having me.
It's good to have you on. Great topic. Looking forward to digging in. Let's talk about the current state of data collaboration. What does it look like out there these days?
So we're seeing a lot of new players come into the industry solving for our data collaboration. We're seeing a lot of players like Lotemy, who have been in the industry for a long time, solving for data collaboration. We're seeing the clouds and some of the walled gardens, the Googles, the Amazons of the world, providing solutions for their customers. And it really is an evolution of the ability to join two or more data sets to solve a myriad of different problems for marketers.
Alex, I thought all data was in really good shape and it all collaborated together. So I'm shocked to hear that there are challenges out there. Here's some sarcasm for you on whatever data is for you when you're listening to this. So I'm curious, what are some of those big challenges that businesses are facing when they're trying to put data collaboration initiatives in place?
To try to simplify some of the applications for a data collaboration platform, there's joining together of two or more data sets within an organization. So you can think about the different teams that manage different data from different systems within a brand. So your chat customer touch points, your email customer touch points, any sort of maybe offline point of sale touch points. Those are all probably formatted very differently, different sources telling different stories. So just the unification, which might not marry well together. So the ability to even join those different data sets that represent a customer, that's one kind of broad example of data collaboration. Then there's also the marrying of data that is a brand's first party data with any sort of external partner to fill the gaps, to help better understand any sort of buying behavior, propensity, and definitely measurement as we come upon signal loss with third party cookies going away. it has been the glue that's helped stitch together that story of who I want to target, the ability to target, and then understanding who responded to some sort of an ad campaign. So it's definitely a proposed solution. I think there's many that we're going to see work their way to the surface as brands and all the rest of the players across the ad tech ecosystem navigate a pretty crazy, wild ride that is 2024.
I think we're going to spend quite a bit of time talking about some of the challenges when it comes to first and third party data. We're going to talk actually tomorrow quite a bit about deprecation of cookies and what the impact of that is going to be. I think that's called Cookiegeddon. I'm not sure that it's been tagged yet, but it feels like Google's sort of pushed back some of the more negative impact effects of that. But we're not prepared, need to be prepared. A bunch of marketers just said, thanks, I'm going to have nightmares tonight. Thanks for mentioning that to us. So what are the most common use cases? And you sort of touched on one a moment ago, which is the ability to tie data together so that marketers have a singular picture and therefore can be more strategic in their reaction to buyer behavior. Are there other use cases out there for data collaboration?
So I think from a planning perspective, that could mean many different things. Planning could mean I want to understand who my ideal persona is. So I want to understand what my customer looks like so I can cater my product offering, my ad creative, my content strategy. So it can mean many different things on the back end of the information that a collaboration can surface. It also can be a means by which both a brand and a media owner can put their first-party data into a privately permissioned environment to inform, is there meaningful overlap between my current customer base or my prospective customer base and your content consumers? Is this a good investment for me? Is this something that I should increase my budget? Maybe I should prioritize this media outlet over another one for something more creative, like a homepage takeover. This is where I want to put my extra dollars to make a big splash. Some of the emerging ones, some of the more creative, fun ones that we're starting to see is complementary collaborations. So a good example would be, I am an airline company and I am a hotel chain. We probably share a customer base. We're not competing for those customers. But should we execute a collaboration in a way to validate that there's a high overlap between our customer base and then also use the delta of those customers to try to drive each other, basically be able to repurpose those data sets as prospective customers that they can kind of co-brand, co-market to?
I think you put a really interesting scenario in front of us, and I want to spend a little more time on that. So this idea of, if you will, temporary collaborations or collaborations to determine whether or not a larger collaboration is justified, what does that look like for the two parties? In other words, how are they seeing data and how are they sort of collaborating to get to that, if you will, that data coordination?
Yeah, there's a lot of preparation that needs to go into what data each party wants to put into those collaborative environments. One of the really important things is a dependency on a common ID. So when you're putting that data into those environments, you're doing it without exposing any personal information or anything proprietary to each of the collaborators. So we're seeing a lot of collaborations be keyed off of emails or HEMS. We're seeing them keyed off of MAIDs, and we're seeing a growth in the use of universal IDs. Lotame ourselves, we have our own universal ID, which is called the Panorama ID. So there's an opportunity to utilize this as a common identifier, speak the same language, for lack of a better way to put it, to bring as much first-party data to the party. And that way, thus kind of extracting the most value from the collaboration. And it's an important point because if you have a brand with very little first-party data tied to an authenticated ID or a HEM, the opportunity, the value that they're going to get back is limited. So really being strategic about what is that common ID that your data is tied to is kind of critical to even preparing for these collaborations.
So that makes sense in terms of a structure, but let's talk about sort of the benefit of that type of collaboration. And let's stick with the exact use case we were just talking about. So how does that type of collaboration drive innovation between brands when they're able to sit and really spend some time with a common data set?
I think brands are being forced to rethink strategy. So if I'm an airline brand in the past, they would retarget existing somebody who purchased a ticket in the last 30 days using a third-party cookie. Let's retarget them and make sure that the next time they want to purchase a ticket, we're top of mind. They may put ads in travel sites, common travel sites, in a contextual way. And then they may buy third-party data audiences that are travel intenders. So now they're being forced to think differently and try to utilize as much first or second party data that's available. And now in this case, the airline company might not have a strong signal of an intent to travel, but the hotel company might have a strong signal of intent to book a hotel room in Miami. Now share that data with the airline company. Now the airline company can spend the next 2 to 3 weeks knowing that there's a very high intent phase that's happening to just pepper them with Miami deals on their airline.
Time for a 1 minute break to hear from our presenting sponsor, Mutinex. In 1919, John Wanamaker said, "Half the money I spend on advertising is wasted. I just don't know which half." Well, the advertising landscape has changed since then, and instead of reaching your audience on 2 channels, you're probably reaching them on 20. Turns out John didn't know how easy he had it. But that doesn't mean that you should give up on striving towards marketing effectiveness. No matter how complex your marketing strategy is, Mutinex Growth OX is the market mix modeling platform that measures the impact of marketing on your bottom line. Mutinex's market mix modeling platform calibrates your insights against the latest market conditions so you can make media and marketing investment decisions confidently and quickly. Ready to take your team from I think to I know? Then join brands like Samsung, ING, and Asahi who make better marketing decisions with Mutinex. Mutinex Growth OX, your best decision starts here. To learn more about Mutinex, go to mutinex.co. That's mutinex.co. Okay, here's the rest of today's interview. A special thanks to our presenting sponsor, Mutinex. Ready to take your team from I think to I know? Then join brands like Samsung, ING, and Asahi who make better marketing decisions with Mutinex. Mutinex Growth OX, the marketing mix modeling platform that makes measuring ROI fast, easy, and cost-effective. Request a demo at mutinex.co. That's mutinex.co.
If we're pretending for a moment that, I'm going to throw a term out here, but data balkanization is a thing that happens obviously because two businesses don't want to share data unless there's a partnership or intent for partnership. But what about large organizations who have that data balkanization? Is that really the core use case for data collaboration?
I think we will, again, see an evolution to the comfort level of this type of data sharing, because through these clean room and data collaboration environments, that risk of exposure of that data being stolen has been minimized. And that's very different from how we would have operated a couple of years ago, where it's, I'm quite literally going to send you an Excel file, a first name, last name, email, and what's to stop you from utilizing this, repurposing it outside of the spirit of the partnership?
Talk about those protections that are in place and how that would soothe maybe somebody thinking about this, Alex.
Yeah, it ranges. So the good news and the bad news is there's a lot of different options out there to execute these collaborations. You've got walled gardens. So within Meta, Facebook, you can execute this type of data sharing, permissioning. It's going to limit just, I only want to see the overlap of these two data sets. I want to restrict overlap on anything less than 10,000 unique profiles. So that way it makes it harder for you to like reverse engineer back to a certain smaller data set. I want to inject noise into it because I'm hypersensitive to this. So depending on the partner that you work with, there's a myriad of different levels. And some of them make it really hard to take the data back out in a way that is then targetable. So they're really great for validation and kind of planning. but then they don't necessarily scale on the now what can I do with this? How do I put this into action? So asking all of these questions of what is your use case? What is your application for this is important to setting up what partner to invest in.
In what ways do data sharing collaboration initiatives enhance customer insights?
So today, a lot of brands rely on Google. They rely on partnerships with data companies to feed and fuel some of those customer insights. I would say a lot of that is somewhat dependent on cookies to be that glue that holds some of that data together. So we're seeing data collaborations preserve that functionality as a means to join those two different data sets and doing it on that common ID.
Let's go back to this idea of balkanization, if we can, Alex, because I have to say it is, as somebody who deals with a large number of large accounts, large clients, it's a real barrier to progress, especially for large organizations. I think if anybody's listening in today and works at a smaller organization, especially in the SaaS world, it's sort of our bread and butter. We can't imagine not having great data sets that we're able to pull together. Whether or not we think they're messy or not, they're not nearly as messy or difficult as larger organizations. So what I understand here is just how much of this is really about large organizations failing to be able to bring data together in a useful way. Or, Alex, this is much more something that you're seeing out there with some of the smaller, more adroit organizations that are just looking to improve their marketing.
We're seeing both. We're seeing the larger organizations have the teams, the resources to stand their data up in, I'll use AWS, they're a good partner of ours as an example. So they're able to say, I've got my data, it's sitting in my cloud, in my own data warehouse, you need to come meet me. And they have the power, but they also have the teams and resources to do it themselves. And then we're seeing the smaller and the mid-sized brands utilize platforms like our own Spherical platform, where they want the user-friendly interface. They want an end-to-end solution. They're not going to stand up five different technologies to execute their first-party data strategy, enrichment strategy, modeling strategy, and activation strategy. So I think we're starting to see that divide where the small to mid-sized companies need a one-stop shop, user-friendly, kind of appeals to every level of end user, different from the large companies who are saying, bring the data to me. In this case, Lotame as a partner would bring our own global data footprint into a clean room like an AWS to fill those gaps, augment their own first-party data, enrich their first-party data for enablement.
What you've explained makes a ton of sense. What I'm a little confused about is how is this different from a customer data warehouse or a data stack or a data silo?
What we're seeing is this is a functionality that has been built into those environments and almost table stakes for those environments to be competitive at this point. So the AWS's of the world, the Googles of the world, even Snowflake, who's a front runner, who's built off of AWS, which you don't hear very often. So they're all data warehouses that are solving this obvious problem by being able to do that permissioning amongst their own customers.
Alex, one of the use cases I want to talk about a bit, and this is something that a lot of marketing leaders and marketers who have multinational marketing environments struggle with, and that is that it's a really uneven regulatory field, if you will, meaning laws and restrictions around data in the US are much less onerous than they are, say, for Europe, where GDPR rules. Yet you've got marketing efforts that need to span multiple organizations across multiple continents. So I'm curious, is this a use case where that potentially helps organizations deal with that multinational marketing efforts as a way of sort of weaving your way around those inconsistencies in regulatory environments?
Absolutely. I was reading an article recently, not only about how CMOs now need to have a tech background, but how lawyers now need to have a technology degree. Because this is exactly why understanding this concept and understanding how data can be permissioned and making those decisions, it is hairy, to say the least. But data collaboration and clean rooms are presenting a promising future for the ability to continue joining data in a way that's going to make everybody feel a lot more comfortable about the utilization of their own data assets.
I'm going to take us back to We talked briefly about this idea of, say, two brands who have complementary data sets. And it feels like in many ways, that's what we're talking about. You've got complementary data sets where one data set could enrich the other. And it feels like to some degree, this is one of those things we should perk up and listen to, because at the end of the day, I think the US regulatory environment is going to be very similar to Europe's very soon, certainly if California is any indicator. Can you give me an example, Alex, of an initiative that really drove a lot of value for a client in terms of data collaboration?
So we talked about two different brands joining together. I think that's still pretty future thinking. The more likely scenario we're going to see is agencies on behalf of their brands working to stand up kind of preferred publisher networks where they're probably pre-committing dollars to buy inventory in exchange for that ability to have that first party data relationship. So I think that one is the signals that I'm seeing. That one's the strongest. I'm seeing the brand to publisher direct as well, but I think that doesn't scale in the same way. That will happen in some unique scenarios. So those are two of the big ones that I'm seeing kind of around the corner.
Alex, really appreciate you spending some time with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I look forward to joining you again tomorrow.
Okay, that wraps up this episode of the MarTech Podcast. Thanks to Alex Terrio from Low2Me for joining us. In part two of this interview, which we'll publish tomorrow, Alex and I are going to dig in and talk about the effects of third-party cookie deprecation. If you can't wait until our next episode and want to learn a little bit more about Alex, you can find a link to her LinkedIn profile in our show notes, or you can visit her company website at lowtame.com. That's lowtame.com.
Okay, that wraps up this episode of the MarTech Podcast. Thanks to our guest host, Doug Bell, the CMO of Chief Outsiders. If you'd like to get in touch with Doug, you could find a link to his LinkedIn profile in our show notes, or you can contact him on Twitter, where his handle is Market Advocate. Or you could just visit his website, which is chiefoutsiders.com. Just one more link in our show notes I'd like to tell you about. If you didn't have a chance to take notes while you were listening to this podcast, head over to martechpod.com, where we have summaries of all of our episodes and contact information for our guests. You can also subscribe to our weekly newsletter, and you can even apply to be the next guest speaker on the MarTech Podcast. Of course, you can always reach out on social media. Our handle is MarTechPod, MARTECHPOD, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Or you can contact me directly on LinkedIn. My handle is BenJShap. BenJShap. And if you haven't subscribed yet and you want a daily stream of marketing and technology knowledge in your podcast feed, we're going to publish an episode every day this year. So hit the subscribe button in your podcast app and we'll be back in your feed tomorrow morning. All right, that's it for today. But until next time, my advice is to just focus on keeping your customers happy.
Thanks for listening to the MarTech Podcast, an I Hear Everything production. Looking to launch or scale a podcast like this one for your brand? Then visit iheareverything.com.